Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true.
Hello, and welcome to the 45th Music of Marriage radio show with
Bob
and Evie. We are also on the web. If you have a computer or an iPhone and you want to look up www.themusicofmarriage.com, we have a book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing, Five of Many, but Five Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. And being musicians and songwriters and performers ourselves, we found that this topic that had been kind of heavy on our hearts for many years is also heavy on many people's hearts in our audience. And they're either sitting there drinking their troubles away or just hurting inside from troubles in their homes, marriages, parents, you know, whatever. So we all have our situations, but we're here to hopefully encourage you and with the beauty of the inspiration of music to kind of get us thinking freshly and hopefully positively about how to make our marriages sing.
And we're on a very big topic called God's love language. And that love language is defined in 1 Corinthians 13, which is, for those of you who don't know the Bible, a book in the New Testament. And so we're basically doing a word study, taking each word of what love is and each word or phrase of what love isn't. God was smart enough to show us what love is by what it isn't, and vice versa. So he's got the bases covered. There's quite an amazing passage. It's often quoted actually at weddings, and today we're taking on a real heavy duty topic, and that is love does not insist on its own way.
Wow, so, that's a negative. You know. When there's a negative, then the positive shines, right? Like, we went to art school. We're artists and musician types. And you'd learn about negative space and positive space. And when God, in his love language, says love is not insistent on its own way, well, that's like you take that out. You take that out
of the equation.
But what you have left is what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about how not insisting on your own way can help your marriage and all your relationships. And Bob just talked about God's love language, and part of we've been going week by week on the different words, which, by the way, are on our website in podcasts, right, Bob?
Yes.
Don't know if they're all up there yet. But they're getting up there.
Yeah, the whole
one by one.
God's Love Language series is up there, as well as some previous series that we've done. Mm-hmm. And we'll keep that going. So,
yeah. Right. So we have a dictionary definition of insistent. I feel like I'm in high school or something, but we find it very helpful to just look up the old-fashioned definition in the dictionary. If you're insistent, you are demanding something, and you're not allowing refusal. You will like this. You will be happy. Oh, it's better. I'm telling you, this mattress is better, even though you're sleeping lousy and wake up and you can't feel like you're in a car wreck. This is a good mattress because it was $8,000, and the man said so. So if we're insisting or demanding something, not allowing any refusal, and we are repeating our insistence and we are demanding, that's what we're not supposed to be doing according to God's love language. other words that you might think of are being emphatic, assertive, repetitive, intrusive, loud. Often we get very loud in our volume when we're intending to really push something on people.
Determined.
Right.
Determined to get our own way, to insist on our own way.
So Bob had brought up this thing that Gandhi said. Now, Gandhi and Jesus are both people that people in the world have kind of put on the same plane, but we actually know that they're not. Actually, Jesus is God. He's the Son of God. He actually created Gandhi. But like God's image is in all of us, even Gandhi, we, in this theme today, are going to talk about respecting that image of God in others. That's what helps us not to just insist on our own way.
Yeah.
But Gandhi said something, Bob, that you had shared with me this morning.
Yeah, and we can see this in our world today on the big world stage, where it seems like nations are in constant conflict and at war, and rumors of war, and politicians are doing the same on a local level, national level. But if you descend from the world stage all the way to one person's human heart, you will basically come to the conclusion that that's where it all begins, from the heart to the attitudes, to the marriage, to the families, to society, etc., the cultures,
nations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Gandhi said something very powerful, and he said, the day the power of love overrules the power... Oh, let me start that one again. Love and power get a little mixed up here, okay? The day the power of love overrules the love of power, the world will know peace. So there you go. But love does have power in it. And that power has the ability to not only change the world, but to bring peace, not only militarily, but peace in our neighborhoods, our nations, and in our lives.
And in our marriages.
And in our homes as well. But if we love power, look out. We'll be biting and devouring one another.
And that's what insisting on our way, our own way, comes from, which we are to take out of the equation according to God's love language. So we get the fun. We've had the fun of sticking our head in this bucket of insisting on our own way and looking, as Bob and I, see in our own lives, the same human tendencies that we all share. And we see the shared and the common truth that God brings to bear on the situation to help turn our sighing, moaning, and crying into singing. And later we're going to talk about Aretha Franklin and have some her song on George Harrison and stuff. It's really pretty interesting. But
Lyle, love it. We have a good mix of songs today. Interesting.
So the negative always implies the absence of a positive. So, and the negative is that we insist on our own way. And Bob just said the ramifications. What happens when people love themselves, love their power? They love to be on top. We watched this awesome documentary, or rather movie, about Aretha Franklin called Respect. And it was interesting when she was a little girl how one of the older, I guess she was a semi-established singer, young woman, when she saw and heard Aretha singing as so well as such a young girl in a club, she was so jealous of her, and she said, "I'm the queen. You don't sing my songs." She got very angry. She threw her table over and basically took Aretha off the stage and took her backstage and said, "I'm the queen. You don't take my song and try to be the queen. I'm the queen." So how much of this in the movie is actual fact, I don't know. But it's an example of how when we want to rule and insist on our own way, the you know, that's a negative. So we're going to look at how to break down and conquer walls in our relationships by not insisting on our own way. And why does God's love language tell us not to insist on our way? Because when we do that, that love is self-directed. Like, what purpose is it? You think of the electrical circuits in your office or in your walls of your home. If the wires just connected to themselves, how many lights would go on, right? But they connect to other wires and other wires. And you look in the wall and you fish through to make sure that power and their power. Hey, is your microphone working? Honey, the dishwasher's working now, right? But self-directed love is like a wire that's just connected to itself. Mm-hmm. It peters out. It can't do a whole lot of good. But this is how we often function when we're insisting on our own way.
And you need a negative and a positive, right, to make an electrical circuit or current. That's a whole other thing. But
so you're actually loving yourself more than others when you insist on your own way. And God's love language directs us to others first rather than ourselves, because the command is to love God first, then your neighbor as yourself. So it's already assumed that we're going to love ourselves, because naturally that's what we do. Our satisfying our own desires comes naturally to us. It comes unnaturally to us to put our desires aside for the desires of others.
In order to have an others directed love that comes from God, we must be securely rooted in the love of God to get the love that we need to show to our neighbor. And that means having a relationship with God, first of all, and second of all, that means partaking of his love. So if you find it hard, for instance, to love your spouse, then ask God to help you show his love to him or her. If you have a hard time doing that, then check your love for God to begin with. See, because it all begins there. Mark 12, 30 and 31 says, which is one of the Gospels, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. Those were the words of Jesus, actually, and it sums up all the commandments. So the ability to love at all is rooted in the fact that not only did God command us to do this, to show this kind of love, which is God-directed and others-directed love rather than self-directed love, but it's rooted also in the fact that God made us in his image. And his image, and this is what God is like. He is other-centered. He's not self-centered like we tend to be.
And that self-centeredness that insists on our own way really comes from rebellion to the image of God in us, which was perfect before the fall. Before we were deceived into believing, there's a better way. Did God really say this? You know, come on over, take a walk on the wild side, baby. And that's what humanity did. So that's what we're trying. That's why we have to have radio shows. I don't think in heaven we'll need these to help encourage each other to get the love back in our marriages and relationships, because being rooted in God's image, being created in God's image as we are, we have that irretrievable, inescapable knowledge in us, which the Bible tells us we have that knowledge of his love in us. And the benefits of that, when we respect that truth, are that being made in God's image gives way to self-love over loving others. It gives way to that. Being made in God's image gives way to a false sense of self-importance. Being made in God's image gives way to destructive behavior and speech. So if we respect and recognize, respect God, respect that we are created in His image, that really helps us to get a new perspective and new motivation for loving out of that reality, and then loving our spouse, who's our nearest neighbor, which God commands us to love our neighbor as ourselves, and our spouse is pretty close of a neighbor. That reflects our respect for God. Mm-hmm. And that is the motive behind God saying, love others as you love yourself. Not that you love yourself in a selfish way, but you love yourself because you're created in God's image. And you know, love of self is overly, and self-esteem has been taken down a kind of destructive path of thinking, whereby this culture says it's all about ourselves. And that's one of the,
And so that means we should respect ourselves, you know, first of all, and not denigrate ourselves. And this will give security to us. This will create a sense of security so that we're not thrown off into dramatic reactions when things don't go our way, for instance, because it's not about us. It's not, this isn't about you. It's not about me. And when things go out of kilter and we don't have the self-respect that comes from God respect, we end up with extremes like low self-love, self-esteem,
low self-respect.
Yeah.
Which can, and I was thinking of that on the way over here, actually. Self-confidence is a good thing to have. Some people lack self-confidence because they were told maybe when they were a kid, you'll never amount to anything. Maybe they were put down by other people in their lives, peers, parents, whatever. So self-confidence is a great thing to have, because if you have low self-esteem or low self-confidence, you'll tend to maybe insist on your own way as a way of trying to grab some kind of sense of worthiness that you weren't given by other people. Mm-hmm. So you might overact in you know, throwing your weight around or being bossy or what. It'll come out wrong because you don't have a quiet confidence mm-hmm. within you, because you weren't taught, or you're not embracing the reality that each of us can be very self-confident mm-hmm. of our importance, because God says we are each important. But the ironic thing about that is that because we're each important, your spouse is as important to God as you are to God, as are all other people. So that self-importance, though, becomes the very thing that puts us all on the same plane. It doesn't allow us to rise above another and act out of these better than you type of behaviors that insist on our own way.
So if you find yourself saying, I'm a loser, I'm nobody, I can't do anything right, check yourself right there, because that reflects an insecurity, a low self-view image. And on the other extreme, if you say, well, I'm successful, I'm better than them, I can do whatever I want, and I can get whatever I want, well, that's the other extreme where you got to check yourself too, because then you have an overflated view of your own importance in the scheme of humanity. And none of us are more important than another. We're on a level playing field. God's made it that way, so that no one elevates themselves above others. And that's why God himself doesn't show favoritism. He says that in his word, and neither should we.
And so, that's how we preserve our marriages and relationships. And also we have the fact that the ability to love is rooted in this fact that we're made in God's image, and in doing things God's way, what we we'll be doing then is we will be quick to listen. We will have a listening heart. We will be slow to speak. We will think before we speak so as to purposely preserve relationships. You think, what if I say this, what damage will that cause? Or how will it be helpful? So quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. In other words, being careful to protect and respect the happiness of the other person. And so being flexible in our opinions, not being fixed. My idea is the only idea that's important because that's just how we're wired to think oftentimes. As we can all know, the ramifications of that. And so we're going to talk about also Aretha Franklin's song coming up is a reflection of, in her life, the way that she, as a child, was seen for her talent. Her talent was known by her father and people around her. And so even as a young child, she would be woken up out of her sleep to come on and sing at the party, you know. Her father wanted to show off her voice. And so she, though she had this gift inside of her, being the young child and being an obedient child that she was, she would sing when she was asked to sing, even if it was being woken up in the middle of the night. And there are many things that you could see that she cooperated with the demands and requirements of others because that's what they wanted. You know, they maybe wanted to make money from her or whatever it was.
But so, her mother, however, said, you don't have to sing just because someone tells you to. And, of course, she was divorced because her dad was, you know, a playboy, basically. And her mother respected her. So, but also her husband insisted on his own way when it came to the songs he wanted Aretha to record. For instance, she recorded 9 albums of his songs without a single hit on Capitol Records in NYC. The best of the best. But that attitude of her husband prevented the artist in her from emerging and being the best she could be. So she started asking for respect, right, Evelyn?
Right, and a lot of us, if we have a domineering husband or father presence in our life, and we're kind of a shy, kind, compliant, nice person, you know, they always say nice guys finish last or whatever. Well, you should be kind and you should be nice, but there is a point where it becomes really abusive to be a domineering person to the extent that you're squashing and crushing your spouse's gifts and their kind of room to bloom. And because maybe you want to take credit, maybe you're pushing for some business success, financial success. And so rather than give them that respect, you know, and respecting them as being made in the image of God, who is my spouse that I would, you know, step all over them, control them, give them a short leash so that I can have kind of my way in how things are going to go. So when we remove this insisting on our own way mentality, it has a lot of really great positive things that replace that negative space. So it was interesting how Aretha finally, when she said, I'm doing my own thing, she wrote the song Respect. And she was kind of trying to stand up for herself. And it was interesting because as a kid, her nickname was Ree, you know, Aretha Ree. And they'd call her Riri. And her sisters were her backup singers. And it's interesting how in this song, when she just went her own way to a small studio in the South, really great studio, many of you know about it, to hear her sisters as they were kind of composing and bringing this song into being. But they chanted that re-re-respect, which was actually her nickname. So that was kind of cool too.
So let's hear from Aretha.
Thank you for listening to The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie. And if you'd like to hear more on how to make your marriage sing, go to themusicofmarriage.com. There are podcasts there. And we hope that if you have a church group or any other opportunity, even in your home, we have done little workshops or shared, the wonderful, encouraging good news about how to make your marriage sing, and played our live music and so forth. So we're having fun with the concept of music, because music is inspiring, and I think in our homes we often lack that positive energy that comes from music of all kinds, classical to jazz and everything in between and around. So, and that's one thing in our second segment here about God's love language, which tells us, don't insist on your own way. We are going to be able to build up core relational strength by not insisting on our own way. So we need to achieve a balance in marriage where there are two ideas of what or how to do it. For example, I'd like to go visit my parents for Father's Day. Yeah, but we went there last. I'd like to see my parents. Well, you figure out every day as a husband and wife how to make it work, right? And to not just insist on your own way. And that really takes a lot of soul searching. And to even come up with a radio program and notes and writing about not insisting on your own way, when I see that in myself, it's so ingrained, it's like my fingerprints practically ingrained in me. How on earth can I ever be that wife to Bob, or that friend to people, or that child of God who really doesn't insist on her own way? I think if we just took that one thing and spent our time meditating on that, so many marriages would be and relationships would be immediately better. You know what happens immediately when you say to someone, you know, I think I'm just too overbearing. I'm always thinking my way is better. I'm marginalizing you by, you know, dominating and so forth. And that's very challenging and not easy for us to look in that mirror. But it certainly is the way out of many problems and the way to a much happier life in our homes, right?
Yes, especially by avoiding arguments by not insisting on your own way. That's actually the biggest cause of arguments, because whenever you insist, then you're, according to the Bible, not showing love. You're putting yourself before others, and no one likes that. So your spouse is going to react. And if you both insist on your own way, then you're really at loggerheads with each other. So since that does happen, right, we all got to be honest, it happens in every marriage. Let's not only be on our guard, but when it does happen, be quick to get out of that cycle and apologize if you insisted on your own way. Sorry, honey, I insist, you know, on my own way. What would you like to do? And that all of a sudden changes everything.
It really is amazing, and it seems quite unnecessary to, like, if I'm actually right, why shouldn't I insist on my own way? Of course I'm not just going to roll over and say, yeah, it's okay to do it that way when it's really not. Well, you may be actually have a better solution or better answer, but I think insisting on your own way doesn't mean that your idea was wrong or that you shouldn't care about what's the right solution, but it's that you should be unifying. The goal should be unity and everybody's happiness. And that's why in the home, you know, when you are shown demonstrating to your children, for example, that you're working things out kind of as a team in consideration of others, then that helps to build that, it instructs and it helps to build that sense of security that, you know, this isn't about one person who's saying, well, since you don't do it my way, I'm going to go out and do this or go out and do that or whatever, go into destructive behavior. So we were thinking in this section of building up core relational strength in the homes, which of course leads out to the churches. Churches are comprised really of the home and then society, culture, nations, the world. If you want to change the world, which is a big theme that gets bandied about in music and so forth, let's change our hearts and change how we behave behind the scenes in our home. Parents must not exasperate or frustrate their children by demanding something of them that they don't demonstrate themselves. Don't demand of your children something that you don't demonstrate. Kindness, patience, all these things. Parents must not exasperate or frustrate children by being at odds with their spouse. We need to have unity in the way we train and teach our children. And if there is a different opinion or strong, you know, opposing ideas about how we as a husband or wife are going to handle a situation with a teenager or a child, we shouldn't undermine each other in front of the children. And also, don't be too controlling over children or give them too short of a leash. And we might think as a parent that we have the right to do these things, to be harsh and demanding of our children. But we really don't have a right to not love our children. So,
and if that kind of thing goes on, in the best homes, the best of homes, that can easily happen. And it could just be that, well, you know, you haven't really talked about a particular issue with your husband or wife, and then you communicate something to your children. Well, but Dad said this, but Mom said that. Oh, okay. Well, then we'll talk about that. Dear, then go have a talk with your wife or husband. But the thing is that no matter what happens, and if things get derailed, there's one principle that really kicks in, and that is the buck stops with the husband and the father. And that's a biblical principle. And so husbands are responsible for love in the home and demonstrating the value of his wife. And husbands must guard against their own propensity to insist on their own way and to lord it over their wives. They must be servants, of course, of their wives, like Christ commanded, to love your wife as your own body, as a matter of fact. So that's loving your wife as yourself, literally. And because you're both one in spirit and flesh, that becomes an even more important principle. But really, the goal is to have a level of happiness in the home by putting others first. It's not one-off moments. It's a way of life, really. Happiness isn't a destination. It's a way of life, right? We've heard that said.
Yeah. And parents, make it clear and make it a household rule that your goal is to have unity and to make everyone happy. And respect your children, and then they will grow up respecting their husband and their wife. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Build up your child. Let them know, that they are not there to be used for the parents' gain. To be, I think it looked to me like Aretha Franklin was used as a trophy or a showpiece, because she was trotted out to sing at the parties no matter what hour of night it was and all these things. In what ways do we train our children in these attitudes? Do they see us as a wife or a husband just being insistent and immovable? There's a time, and that's actually many times, when we just need to put down our own desires and just say, okay, honey. And I can gladly say that I see that and have seen that in my father all my life, that I'm sure he would say, I literally thought my dad was perfect until I was about 16 or so. I said, I just realized, Dad, that you're not perfect, although I still thought he was pretty perfect. But there was always a deep love stemming from and rooted in God's deep love for him and my dad's thankful, grateful heart for God's expansive and grace covering his sin, and God's love for him, and the beauty of his salvation and the beauty of his creation. And my dad was a musician, the beauty of music, the beauty of art. And so my dad was always marveling in these things and pointing them out, taking us to Washington, D.C. every spring to see the cherry blossoms, traveling us across the country to see the national parks and the greatness and the wonder of God's creation all around us, in which we have a very important place, because we, as men and women, are the crown of his creation. And so we need, as parents, to engender, to create that environment in the home that helps the children to know that that's who they are, and that this is how they are. This is how they are going to be when they grow up in that kind of environment. So bringing parents in here into the marriage context is critical, because often in marriages there becomes division, especially I've seen where, you know, daddy said we could have this. Well, I told, you know, him you couldn't. And of course that's going to happen. But in general, there needs to be a unifying sense and a sense of peace in your home and unity and happiness.
Yeah, and that's not just, you know, with practical, logistical things, but that's also with how you train your children. The Bible says to train your children and bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. Well, your kids, unless they're going to a good Christian school, they're getting trained otherwise in things that today are even embarrassing to even mention. And so it's got to be very, there's got to be an all-out war against the ideology of the world infecting your family. And that comes from not only exposing what's going on in those schools or institutions or what friends are telling your kids.
What's on the iPhone and
YouTube. Or what's on the internet, even worse. But it's got to happen starting at the home, starting around the dinner table. What do you talk about? Do you have family devotions? Do you pray together? These old sayings that we've heard time and time again are really true. We tend to just kind of
the almost family that laugh prays at them. Together stays together.
Yes.
Used to be a bump back in the days of bumper stickers. Remember, paper bumper
yes.
stickers were. Cool.
but there are truths, you know, are timeless. Anyway, we're going to listen to Lyle Lovett here.
Well, before we listen to Lyle, because his song says, "Is she's no lady, she's my wife." This is another example of a song coming out of a place of not being too thrilled with the way some things are going. And I just like Aretha Franklin's song, Respect, was a reaction, I think, to her finally saying, you know what, respect me. I was always the little girl with the talent. I was told to go here, to record there, sing these songs, do this, do that. And I'm finally saying, you know, I'd like a little respect. And that's the message. You know, we need to respect others, as we were saying, respect the image of God and give them room to bloom. Give your mm-hmm. child room to bloom. And don't, if you see, you know, a great talent in your kid, don't just pride yourself on your child and use them like as a trophy for yourself. You know what I mean? It's very subtle how that can happen, especially, you know, Facebook today is a whole thing in itself. But Bob had mentioned husbands and fathers. We talked about parents. Husbands and fathers are the gatekeepers in the home. He had mentioned they are to demonstrate the value of their wives. But wives also are to help the husband to be the gatekeepers of the home. And I'm not sure if we mentioned about the wives. The wives must conjoin in the effort. That word means combining theory and method. What you think and how you're going to do it, how you're going to carry it out. The wives must combine that with their husband in a joint effort to produce a smooth operation of unity of heart and mind in the home. You may not have it on certain topics. I know for Bob and I, there were certain things about just, you know, it might be what school the kids are going to, and you come from different perspectives. You're looking, one's scared about the finances, one's full of faith, God can do it. How do we come together when there seems to be these great divides? Well, because we do it God's way. We remember God's love language, and we use that, and we think that. And then the wife also should set a peaceful tone in the home, a tone of security, and creating an environment of beauty, which the husband should show appreciation for and as well. And in this way, we strengthen, and that's what this section, we strengthen our core relational stability with one another in our marriages and in our homes. So when Lyle Lovett is singing this, it sounds kind of like a negative song, but think about the positive that is the response. It's what he's really thinking about, how things should be, and I think we can figure that out too. So she's no lady, she's my wife, Lyle Lovett.
She hates my mama, she hates my daddy too. She loves to tell me she hates the things I do. She loves to lie beside me almost every night. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife. The preacher asked her, and she said, I do. The preacher asked me, and she said, yes, he does too. The preacher said, I pronounce you 99 to life. Son, she's no lady, she's your wife. And I can't remember how I met her. Seems like she's always just been a hanging here off my right arm. And I can't remember how I ever thought that I just couldn't live without a woman's charm. And even though she loves the smell of French perfume, and even though she walks around in high-heeled shoes, well, all I know is I'm the one who pays her price. Man, she's no lady, she's my wife.
So we're back with the music and marriage and talking about not insisting on your own way, one of God's very important love language principles. And so how do you not do that? Well, let's talk about breaking down the roadblocks to insisting on your own way, which is a form of self-centeredness. And character building is really what we need to focus on. It's a critical component to improved personhood and improved marital strength as well. And so what do we need to do? Well, we need to replace a childlike me first attitude with a godlike you first attitude. We need to replace a childlike I'm better heart attitude with a godlike humble attitude. Maybe even you're better. Replace childlike I want attributes with godlike sacrificial attitudes. Okay, so you can really only dislodge a habit by crowding it out with its biblical alternative. I mentioned that last week. We can even go further than that. Evelyn, so when it comes to teaching our children, what are things that we need to do?
Teach our children that their self-worth is rooted in God's love for them. How are our children being taught about their self-worth? The truth is, God says our self-worth is rooted in God's love for each of us. Let's pass that on to our children. Let's make sure they are taught that and not taught anything else. Number two, we can teach our children that their true identity, popular word, is not man-made. Our identity is not man-made, it's God-made. Teach our children that their identity is not about them, just like we need to demonstrate in our marriages as husbands and wives that our identity is not all about me in a self-centered culture. How often do little children grow up seeing parents holding up the camera, checking themselves out to take endless selfies of themselves? What does this teach our children about who's important and what is of value? Something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole I, me, mine, self-centered, self-love thing, if our love for ourselves and our respect for ourselves is rooted in God's love and respect for us and the love language he pours out generously for all of us to be embraced by, then and only then can we embrace our spouse, can we embrace our children and teach them how to embrace the stranger, how to embrace our enemy, the foreigner, embrace people with the love language that and demonstrate that as God does to us.
And when we don't do that, to have the humility to admit our faults, to confess our faults and sins to one another, so that healing can ensue. You've offended your wife or your child. Say that you're sorry for doing something and make sure it's specific, not just a generalized thing.
It's a sign of maturity to be willing to work out your problems, to be willing to step back and think and say, okay, my feelings got the better of me. My natural tendency got the better of me. As a wife, I got bossy. I'm too controlling, insisting, yelling, whatever, creating this bad insistence on my own way, bad karma in the house. And so we have to replace that with all these good things we've been talking about and have the maturity. I think it does take maturity to stop and be quiet and be willing to communicate. And, you know, in that documentary about the Beatles that's come out, that movie, you saw John and Paul in the cafeteria, and George was a little bit of, you know, he was marginalized a bit. And I think he felt mm-hmm. that way. He felt like Paul was the great one with all the great ideas, and John was right up there, and George felt like a third violinist or something, a third
yeah.
fiddle. And so John very kindly said to Paul, you know, because George quit the band on that last record for a while, then mm-hmm. he came back, but John said, you know, what was the matter? They were talking about it. And he said, well, he was wounded and we didn't give him any Band-Aids. And mm-hmm. so, and I think Aretha, when she wrote Respect and when Lyle wrote that song, that's unfortunately, but also good, is great songs, like Willie Nelson said, often come out of pain and suffering in our lives. Mm-hmm. But hopefully they teach us as well that let's be aware of how much our natural personality tendencies can wound our children, mm-hmm. wound our wife, wound our husband. And let's value and respect one another. And we do that by not insisting on our own way. It was very interesting to us that George Harrison wrote I, Me, Mine.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you write a song, I, Me, Mine, I, Me, Mine, I, Me, Mine, all through the day, all through the night, I, Me, Mine, I, Me, Mine, I, Me, Mine? Sounds like a little child pouting in their room saying, or a wife or a husband saying, all I hear is I, Me, Mine. It's all about you. And you know, he was wounded, mm-hmm. and he may have actually literally felt that way. But it's a phenomenal song, and it's a phenomenal lesson really to us all. So let's be encouraged that there's so much music to be sung in our marriages and in our home life and in our lives in general, so much happiness to be had when we stop wounding each other. And when we do, give each other the Band-Aids and just play a lot of nice, happy music, right?
Here we have George and the Beatles.
I'm in mine. Now the brightness.